Welcome to episode 5 of the Family Podcast Network, helping you work with your tough kids and even those that aren't. Coming at you from Abilene, Texas, headquarters of Family Podcast Network, I'm your host, Trey Gibson. Hey, guys, wanted to jump right into the topic today real quickly. I want to talk to you guys a little bit about some really high prevalency in an issue that I'm seeing become very popular, and that's cutting and burning. So many kids that we're seeing nowadays that are in my office especially that are struggling with cutting on themselves or burning themselves and several other different things that they can go through. And it's, I'll be honest, it's slightly off topic with what I originally anticipated doing today. Originally I was going to go down talking about praise and praising our kids and the value of that. I know we've gone over some of that more, but I really wanted to get in depth with praise. But I really felt like this needed to be a shift today. So I did kind of a paradigm shift on what I was going to do today to move over to cutting and burning. I'm doing that. And I wanted to talk about this largely because of how prevalent it's become with our kids. And so many parents have gotten to a point where they're like, I don't know what to do with this. And so they try to embark on working with their kiddos in these cases on their own. And in reality, what's happening is they're getting in there not knowing what to do whatsoever. And in most cases, I mean, they're actually making things worse than they had to be. So I wanted to come up with something that would help address those issues. So, what I started doing was I've put together a lot of different stuff. So I wanted to address this with you guys. Some folks may be out there thinking, well, Trey, not my kids. My kids would never do that. They don't do that, and I know they don't. My question to you would be, how do you know? How do you know? Do you have the type of relationship built with your kids where they tell you everything, where they're comfortable admitting to you in all things, in all cases? How do you know that they don't struggle with this? Guys, I am trained in this stuff. I have a psychological background in education where I've gone very deep into this. And you want to know what? I still won't make a phrase like that. Well, not my kids. The reason why, guys, that statement is arrogant and it's ignorant. Now, understand, ignorance does not mean that you're stupid. Ignorance just means that you don't know. You don't have the information, the facts. You don't understand all to it, guys. Saying that my kids would never do this, it is arrogant and it is ignorant, guys. And I'm telling you, and we're going to talk some a little bit later of where cutting becomes the biggest issue. And it's particularly in those kids in their early and mid-20s. And this is where you begin to see kids that have gotten in the habit of doing this. That is when you'll start to see them committing suicide and doing other more drastic issues that are what we are absolutely not wanting. And that's one of the reasons why I think Our kids are growing up to be young adults that are doing this is because there are folks that was, well, it never happened to me. They never want to talk about it. They never want to admit it. They never want to get to visiting with their kids about this because it's an uncomfortable. And it is uncomfortable, guys. I get that. It is very uncomfortable, but we need to be talking about this. So, first off, you say, not my kids. How do you know? Second off, maybe it's not your kids. Maybe your kids won't ever do that. Maybe you do have that relationship with them that it'll never get to that. And I understand that, and I appreciate you parents who built that relationship with your kids. You will never know until much later, would be my guess, just how important that was to them and keeping them safe, sane, and in the game. But maybe it's not your kids. If it's not your kids, here's what I'll promise you. You know somebody, some kid, some parent whose kid is doing this. And it's important that we be educated on this stuff to be able to help respond to them in the way they need us to. So I'll promise you, if your kids aren't doing it, there are some kids out there who are, that you know, that your kids know, that are active in it and have absolutely no clue what to do. And so increasing our education on what to do, what's right, what's wrong, understanding how this stuff works and why it happens helps keep us from a spot to where we don't know what to do and then we wind up making the wrong mistakes. So I'm actually very, very, if y'all can't tell, I'm very animated about today. I'm super excited about it. Not just because I'm passionate about it, but this is actually going to be a very neat episode. We're actually going to get to have our first interview come on Family Podcast Network. Somebody that's actually going to come in and talk to us about this. It's actually my wife. My wife grew up with a very tumultuous, very crazy, very upsetting childhood with lots of different factors that we're going to talk about here later. But because of that, one of the things that she turned to was cutting on herself. and how she went through a lot of that. She actually was very active in it long before it was ever popular like it is today. And so we're going to have her talk to us. We're going to get to ask her some, she's going to ask her some questions. We're going to have her respond and even kind of give what she was going through, what she was feeling, what she was having. But most importantly for us parents is this. She's going to get the opportunity to tell us parents what she wished would have happened and what she wished her parents would have known and what she wished they would have done with her. And it's going to be absolutely invaluable. So we're going to start off today with a little bit of education into cutting and burning. What is it? Why does it occur? All those other things before we move into the interview. So first off, let's break down. What is it? Guys, I'm going to run you guys through some of the clinical terms that you're going to see in my practice with this. Don't let it blow your head up. I'm going to use some of the big words and the acronyms and all that other stuff in there. Don't let it overwhelm you. This stuff is very easy to understand. What we're going to talk about is, we're going to define this is, first off, anytime you talk about cutting and burning and those different types of things, you got to go up a little bit. You got to imagine there's an umbrella. So first off, your umbrella term, self-injurious behavior, SIB. Any behavior that you do that is about causing injury to yourself. Now, that can branch out into different things. That can be suicide, or that can be things that aren't suicidal. So we're going to move down the branch that's non-suicidal. We're going to call it NSSI, or non-suicidal self-injury. Okay, so what is NSSI, non-suicidal self-injury? Let's define it. It's described as any type of deliberate, right? So it has to be on purpose, deliberate self-harm. When somebody hurts themselves without suicidal intention, so they have no desire to kill themselves, which causes tissue damage, okay? So it actually has to break the tissue in some way, and it's not socially sanctioned. So what are we talking about? Well, what about piercings? Okay, what if they're taking needles and they're running it through themselves, you know, or excuse me, they're taking, getting different types of piercings or something. That's socially sanctioned. That's okay in our society to get piercings in most cases. Also, when it to be NSSI, it also cannot be attributable to cultural values, right? So I don't know if you guys have ever seen the Maasai tribe in Africa, but have you ever seen like a National Geographic, those folks that wear the big tall neck rings that build all the way up their necks and it stretches and elongates their necks? See, that's not NSSI. Why? Because it is attributed to their cultural value. It's normal for them to do. It's not considered weird, strange, or asocial. It's a very normal thing for them to do. And then, last, it also cannot be intended for public display. So what about the folks that get 500,000 piercings or they tattoo their entire body and it causes them pain and it damages the tissue, but it's for public display for people to see, right? That's also not what we're talking about because it's intended for public display, right? For instance, like in the U.S., for instance, it's not NSSI or non-suicidal self-injury. Like if a person pierces their body, even if it's bizarre, if it's a weird location, if it's a weird quantity and how much they're doing, that is not necessarily NSSI. So, deliberate self-harm to the body without suicidal ideation that causes tissue damage. That's not one of those things we discussed, right? So, we got to move into this. We got to talk about our kids. How is this pertinent to our kids? I think what most parents want when we talk about this is, well, Trey, just give me the symptoms so that way I can be prepared. It's much more difficult than that. The reason for that is predicting and treating this type of thing in our kids, like as a clinician on my part, it's very, very difficult. Much more difficult than in our younger adolescents than it is in our adults, largely because of one thing. Think about it. What is it that your kids are, and it's the nasty I word, what are your kids? It starts with I. I had a parent once say, oh, you mean idiots. It's not what I mean. Not what I mean. But think about it. Your kids are very, or teenagers especially, are very impulsive. They do things without thinking. They react quickly, and they do that dumb stuff that we're like, what were you thinking? That is very normal in our kids. There's actually a very fascinating neurological reason. Remember, neurological means of the brain, study of the brain. There's actually a neurological reason for that. The center part of the brain that actually controls the emotional parts, I believe, is called the amygdala. For you neurologists out there who would go crazy town on that, don't persecute me for that if I got that wrong. But the amygdala, the middle part, that's the part that controls our emotional reactions, right? You're driving down the road, somebody cuts you off, narrowly hits you. That's the part that'll light up in the brain that makes us really upset and angry and frustrated or scared or whatever it is that lights up, right? It's often the irrational part of that. That's the part that wants to go now chase that person down and run them off the road or something like that, right? Next thing that kicks in is what's called the prefrontal cortex, right behind the forehead. That's the part of the brain that will light up next and say, you know what, it might feel good to chase him down, run him off the road, but if you do, you could get a, you know, an offense charge or something like that, and you know, then you got to go to jail or something. That's the part that will kick you in and calm you down, right? So in a normal adult, you get worked up, that amygdala, middle part of the brain lights up, and in a healthy adult, the prefrontal cortex will kick in next and calm us down and say, okay, think this through, and then the executive part will kind of rational and govern us out, and we calm down, right? In adolescence, it works, but it doesn't always function in tandem. So one time, they'll light up, and they'll get really frustrated and emotional, and then all of a sudden, that prefrontal cortex will kick in, they'll calm down, and we'll look at our teenagers and be like, wow, what an incredibly responsible thing you just did, and then we'll get amazed. And then it seems like within the hour, they do something else, and we're like, you idiot, what are you doing? What are you doing? You just made this one, now you're doing this. But what happens is that in teenagers, while those will sometimes coordinate, what they have found is that sometimes that amygdala will light up. They'll have that emotional, irrational response. And what happens is that prefrontal cortex sometimes just won't kick in and get them thinking. And they'll do something stupid and impulsive. There's a neurological reason behind why our adolescents are sometimes so dumb. Now, am I saying that that makes it okay? No, I'm not saying it makes him okay to be doing dumb stuff or irrational or impulsive or whatever else stuff. We got to work with him on that, but that's what the job of us as parents is to teach our kids how to regulate severe emotions with calm down. Let's think this through, okay? So it's very, very difficult to predict this type of thing in our kids. Oh, well, they've got this and this and this, so you can predict that they're going to be one that's going to, you know, struggle with cutting on themselves. It's very difficult to predict because kids will walk into it with the best intentions of saying, I'm not going to do this anymore, but that impulsive part of the brain that doesn't regulate and govern those two different thoughts won't kick in, and so they'll make these dumb decisions, right? So we have to understand it's very, very difficult to predict, but what I am going to do is I'm going to educate you guys a little bit as to what it is, why do folks engage in it, and what can we do as parents whenever our kids get into this type of stuff. So let me talk real quick. I want to start you guys off real quick. What are the number one, what's the profile of the number one folks that you will see that are engaged in this stuff heavy to the point where it could be dangerous? First off, typically you're looking at 20, funny enough, 20 to 30 year olds. First off, females are much more likely. Girls are actually 1.5 to 3 times more likely to engage in non-suicidal self-injury like cutting and burning and those types of things than others. Next off, middle class. They're well-educated typically. The folks that you see doing this the most, 20 to 30-year-old females, intelligent, middle class, well-educated. Often, in many cases, they've had some form of physical or sexual abuse in their past. Frequently, they'll begin to hurt themselves in their teens, and their teen years is when they'll actually start to do it, largely because during that, they're not skilled in emotional expression, right? So these kids haven't been ever taught how do you deal and handle emotions well, so they find the best possible way they can. Sometimes there's issues with like borderline antisocial personality disorders. Maybe there's a lot of times kids that are like very obsessive compulsive, right? They have some thought that gets in their mind, and they can't get it out until they do something to help kind of bring it down, right? Whatever that might be. Some factors that you see in kids that often help precipitate and make this worse, caregiver neglect, not the appropriate amount of care they need, kids having to take care of themselves when it comes to food or emotional stability, those types of things. Early surgeries or illnesses, that was a very fascinating research article I read several years ago that showed that folks that have had early surgeries or illnesses, very severe illnesses in their earlier years, are more likely to cut on themselves. Parental alcoholism is another one. Kids who have parents who drink a lot and are alcoholics. Those kids who have perfectionistic dispositions, those kids that are very perfectionist and they have to get everything exactly right or else it really bothers them and it really irritates them, going back to that obsessive compulsive thing. And then also kids who have a lot of body shape disconcerts, like problems with their bodies or they're very disconcerted about how their body looks if they feel like they're too big or too small. And then distorted body image as well. Kids that maybe they're perfectly thin and fine and healthy, but they feel like they're not. They feel like they're fat even when they're absolutely remarkably thin. These are the types of things that you often see being the number one biggest issues with folks that are going to struggle with this. Remember again, girls, 1.5 to 3 times more likely. Now listen to this. They did a poll of kids, and they asked them, out of all these kids, how many of you guys would be willing to confess to using, at least, they'd be willing to confess to using non-suicidal self-injury, cutting or burning. Out of those kids, 50 6% of them said that they had engaged at least one time in their lifetime. Out of those 56%, 36% of them said they had done it within that year. Now, remember, guys, in any time you do statistical analysis, you run into things like this. Okay, what was their quote-unquote sample size? What that means is where did you survey? If you went to one school where depression rates are really high, well, of course you're going to get that. I don't remember this article, guys. I read it several years ago. I went to go look in our storage to see if I could find it in my notes. I could not find the survey, but what I remember was it was a good, solid survey. But 56% of kiddos have confessed to using an SSI as some form of what they're going through, right? So that brings the question then that many of you parents might be wondering. Why? Why are our kids doing this, right? Why are our kiddos engaging in this type of thing? Why are they turning to NSSI, to cutting themselves, to burning themselves? There's also some other things, guys, I've seen. Like, I've watched some of the younger kids would take erasers, and they would rub erasers on their skin until it burned them, and it caused a second-degree burn. So why are our kids doing this? Let's talk about some of the reasons that I've seen over the last few years, and these are also research-based, guys. Number one, some will use it as a form of punishment to themselves, particularly in like those kiddos that I've worked with that were like sexually or physically abused. Interestingly enough, they'll either internalize the abuse or the rape. They actually blame themselves. And what they do is, as weird as this sounds, guys, they'll self-mutilate. They'll hurt themselves to punish themselves for their bad behavior. It sounds crazy, guys. I know it's like, really? But there are kids who are punishing themselves for the things that have happened to them. Second off, some kids absolutely feel unlovable. So because these individual kiddos that I've worked with see themselves as like not being able to be loved, they'll actually turn that anger inward by striking on themselves, cutting themselves, burning themselves. I know, again, it's like, really, absolutely, but yes, it absolutely happens. Next, some, and especially you ladies, have this particularly bad. You women are particularly taught to internalize your issues, especially like your frustrations and your aggressions. Y'all are taught to turn them in on yourself, right? You know, we see two guys having a knockdown drag out, you know, well, boys will be boys, right? But if two girls are doing it, well, I just can't believe. You ladies especially are taught to internalize frustrations and aggressions. So what do you have to do? Instead of acting out on it, you have to act in, which is one of the number one things that can lead to several different acts of self-injurious behaviors, cutting, burning, etc. But it doesn't stop at those things, guys. That can also be drinking. That can also be drug abuse, and particularly in women, unhealthy dieting, which often can lead to things like cosmetic surgery. Again, going back to that body image. Fascinating stuff. Some will actually do it to fit in kind of culturally. There's been probably a culture of folks that you guys have heard about before, but it's the emo culture. Really quick, I'm going to break it down very simply. Emo culture is typically a group of folks that kind of come together as being those that are more emotional, which is where we get emo, emotional. These are often the ones you see with the black, dark, you know, dyed hair that come across and conceal a majority of their face. I had one kid I worked with for almost a year who wore his hair so long over his face, I couldn't see his eyes at all. And I finally realized one time, just by him lifting up a little bit, that he'd been crying during our session, but you couldn't see that. But often they do that. A lot of people get that confused with gothic type style. You know, style. A lot of the dress is similar, but make sure there's a distinction there between gothic and emo in many cases, or at least in a lot of ways. Now, they can overlap, but not in all cases. Just because you have somebody who is gothic, are they necessarily emo? But some of them will actually fit in culturally. They kind of form a band of folks that get together that are more emotional, and then they'll find out, oh, hey, I do this to help deal with my issues by cutting, and then they start doing it as well. I had a kiddo a while back who said, Trey, I would never cut on myself. She goes, but what I do is, so I don't ever have to cut on myself and I can fit in with him, is that she would actually take eyeliner, and she would run eyeliner on her skin, red eyeliner, like a lighter color, and then she'd rub it in a little bit, and it would leave a light line like a scar. And then she would show that to folks, saying, oh, look, yeah, I've cut on myself. I did this here and here and here. And that's how she would fit in. Tell me that's not just absolutely crazy cool. That's the ideas that they're coming up with. Cool is the wrong word, guys. Forgive me for saying it that way. But just, that's clever. That's more the word I'm looking for. That's so incredibly clever what they came up with to try to fit in, right? So in a lot of cases, it's just a cultural issue to try to fit in. I saw another kid who impressed me. And again, I want you guys to hear me say, I am not supporting kiddos cutting on themselves. I mean, it destroys tissues, and I want you to hear me say that very clearly. I don't support it. It can be very destructive because it can cause a lot of guilt later. But I also saw another kid who very cleverly, what he would do was he would go emo just to keep bullies off of him. He had one particular kid who was telling me, he said he would get beat up, he was getting roughed up. So what he did was he became quote-unquote emo and began cutting on himself to scare people. See, when they were scared of him, they wouldn't beat me up because they were afraid I was going to come to school with a gun one day and they didn't want to die. So I'm not condoning that. I'm not condoning these things and saying that they're okay, but they're clever. I mean, like, wow, that's pretty, I mean, pretty impressively clever stuff that they've come up with, right? So, anyway, moving back to what I was initially going to talk to you guys about. Sorry, guys, I had to flip out the research article I was going to talk to you about. Another one of the reasons of what we're seeing as to why kids are cutting, and I've got to see this one more than any of these other things we've discussed. This is the one that I've seen the most so far. There has actually been what, as I talk to these kids about this, there are kids that are reporting that they actually experience a euphoria when they cut on themselves. As I'm listening to them and as they're talking and explaining to me what it feels like, guys, I would actually go as far to say what they describe to me is a euphoria that is very similar to what I would hear somebody describe an orgasm as. Just a release of emotion that feels good, a pleasurable experience that they have after they cut on themselves. Research that was released, a lot of new stuff. The most recent one I read was in 2009 by a guy named Kamen. Very interesting stuff. It actually suggests that the act of cutting can actually be chemically addictive. And it actually, it'll activate some chemicals in the brain called endogenous opioids. But what it causes is what's called like a neurocircuitry reward. All that is that basically you release chemicals called dopamine and serotonin that make you feel really good when you cut on yourself. And what it does is it gets rid of the, and I'm going to say quote-unquote, the bad feelings that you have. And so this wash of emotion, this chemical that washes across the brain, the dopamine and serotonin, makes you feel really good, and it kind of washes away all the bad feelings. You know, like the emotional or the you know, discomfort or cognitive discomfort is what they call it. But just when your thinking isn't working well and you can't think stuff out real well, it'll actually wash that away. Very, very, very fascinating stuff. So, you know, anytime you go through research articles like this, I always wonder, what about internationally? So I also did some international studies too, looking at some of the other countries around the world, China, Poland, Germany, and some of the other ones that are out there to see what, you know, see what those were looking like. And this is a common issue, guys. This is not just in the United States. This is a common issue out across multiple different countries that are out there. So this is a very, very big thing for us to address and to take a look at. Even in the international studies that I was reading in on, one of the things that I noticed is that there was typically six common categories outside of just America that you would see that would lead to these type of, this deliberate self-harm and whatnot. Typically, you would see the international studies showed that guilt would be one of them, feeling guilty about things, worthlessness, not feeling like you have any worth. Sleep issues like deprivation, interestingly enough, was causing it. Feelings of sadness and helplessness, and then mental disturbance. The most common that these international studies would hit on, the triggers that would cause folks to lead to that type of, you know, harming themselves, was interpersonal conflict at 67.9%. Fascinating. So conflict with in between, like the relationships that we have with the close people around us, that was the highest one. Unfulfilled life goals was the next one, not meeting those goals in life we said we should make. And then last was victimization. I'd like to ask, is there any response from, I know I'm seeing hits from sites around the world now. China, I saw Poland. Hello to my Germany friend that I visited with earlier this week. Hello to you guys. I appreciate y'all being a part of this. I love, love, love seeing that I'm getting hits from other countries. And I just want to say thank you to you guys out there that are passionate about being good parents with what you do. Thank you for you guys and what y'all are doing. But I wanted to get, is there any response from you folks from China, Poland, Germany, and the other countries that I've seen getting hits on the website? What are you guys experiencing? What are y'all seeing there in your country? I'd love to do a follow-up on this, on seeing what's happening internationally. Love to hear back from you guys. Remember, sign up. It's free. Post some comments. Let me know. The forum is now up for you guys on there if y'all want to take a look at that. Make some posts in there. Love to hear from you guys. So it all comes down to one question. We've talked a little bit about where it comes from, why do kids often do those things. So the next question that we've got legitimately is this. What are we to do as parents, right? What do we do as parents whenever we have kiddos who are going through these. And I'm going to be honest with you guys. As I've studied this over the last 10 years, I've spent so much time studying and researching this. I'll be honest, there's not a whole lot of therapeutic treatment stuff that's out there that specifically addresses what do we do when we work with our kids that are cutting and burning and other non-suicidal self-injury. There's very little. Most of the ones that are out there are dovetailing other issues that are out there, like borderline personality disorder. One of the number one therapy techniques is what's called DBT, or dialectical behavioral therapy, is one of the things they use. And that's mostly used in borderline personality disorder folks. And they cross over and they use it over into this. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, but there's not a whole lot that specifically addresses on these things. So I always want to encourage you guys, look for folks who know what they're doing in these areas. But we'll talk about that more in a little bit. Bottom line comes down to this. When it comes to understanding how do we treat this, how do we work with this, and I'm telling you guys this as parents so you can look with an educated mind for a therapist who knows what they're talking about. There's some great and wonderful therapists out there that are really good at what they do, but they don't have a freaking clue about this stuff. And then they jump in thinking they can just apply maybe a few other things that they know, and it winds up having more of a harmful effect than it is helpful. So I want to educate you guys on this stuff so that way you can walk in and make an educated decision about the therapist that you might choose for your kiddo. So anyway, before we get into any of that, we got to discuss one thing. Most of the time, when it comes to talking about this stuff, anytime that you deal with these types of issues, you have to talk about what's called the standard medical model. So I want you guys to imagine this. Imagine in your mind, close your eyes if you need to, and imagine a straight line. The medical model goes like this. Imagine over there on your left side of your line, you have the problem, right? That's the start, the problem. Medical model is you have a problem, straight line across, there's your solution. It's very linear, it's a straight line, problem, solution, that's it, right? Well, it's so linear, it's a little too simplistic when you're working with kiddos that are struggling with things like harming themselves, cutting themselves, and burning themselves. Instead, what I recommend, it's actually a model that's called the cusp catastrophe model. Basically, what it says is this. It says that basically there are large non-linear, so it's not a straight line, there's non-linear changes that in behavior that occur due to small things that happen, right? So imagine it like this. Imagine that straight line, problem, solution, right? We're trying to get to solution. So imagine it like this. You're going down that and you're working towards your solution to your problem, right? And then all of a sudden, what happens? Well, then you get triggered by maybe a bad event that happened in your life and those bad emotions, and it brings you back and you cut on yourself so that way you make yourself feel better, right? You're working on it again, and then what happens is you don't have a very good support network set up, and then all of a sudden your support network falls through, and so you don't have the accountability you need, and then whoop, you double back right back into your initial thing that you were doing before, your cutting that you had before. And then the next time that you're going down it, you might feel totally lonely because of all of that, and you've lost your support network. So you see your friends, and you see these particular group of friends that are the quote-unquote emo crowd, and so then you go and you start cutting again so that way you can identify with them. Do you see what I'm saying? There's no one thing that if you go through helps treat this and then you get out. You can't just give your kids meds and then expect the cutting to go away. It might go away for a little while, but here's what I'll almost guarantee you. It'll come back. Because if you don't treat all the different issues that are coming up, then what happens is you may protect yourself from that one issue, but the bottom line is that one of the other issues may set it off. And it's that way for any therapy out there, guys. Take depression, for instance. Therapy alone doesn't typically fix it. Medicine alone typically doesn't fix it, right? That's that linear medical model that says you just give them some meds, they'll feel better, and they'll quit doing it. Bullcrap! Oh, I get passionate about that. One thing does not fix that, and this particular stuff like cutting is absolutely no different. So, with this cusp catastrophe model, this idea that there's, multiple things, rather than there being one problem, one solution, what it says is there's multiple issues that feed into our primary issue that we're going back to, cutting. So there's multiple things that feed into our kids going back to cutting, right? So, bottom line, multiple solutions have to be implemented to help treat and inoculate a person, right? Remember, inoculation, keep it from happening again, prevent it, right? There have to be several different things that we put into place. So get this medical model out of here. If you got a doctor who's feeding you this idea that you just need to take pills and it'll go away, and I'm not an anti-meds guy. Hear me say, I have no problems with antidepressant medication or anything like that, guys. I think it serves as a wonderful thing for what it is, which is a tool, not a solution. You don't give somebody crutches after they break their leg and tell them to use the crutches for the rest of their life. No, what do you want to do? You want to use it as tools to allow the bone to heal and reset, to take them off of that so that way they can live normal lives without crutches again. You don't give somebody medicine and then tell them to stay on it for the rest of their life. But the medical model that most doctors are prescribing is tells you that. And it's a load of crap, guys, and no research supports it. Okay? Hear me say that. I'm sorry to get so passionate and forceful about this, but it irritates the crap out of me. I'm going to jump on my side of that, too, and say, if you've got a therapist telling you that they just need to come see you, but they're not encouraged that you get your kids on any type of medication, research supports that doesn't work either. You can't just get them in therapy and have them talking to somebody and expect everything to get better. It has to be multimodal. You have to be hitting all the different variables that are happening that are feeding back into that main issue. You have to be addressing it with multiple solutions. So I know you guys are tired of hearing me talk about this, but I want to make sure that I hammer that close. Don't listen to your doctor saying, just take these pills and it'll get better. Don't listen to a therapist who's just saying, just handle just this one individual thing. We'll just try this one approach. There have to be multiple approaches. I'm also telling you this, guys, because I'm going to make some encouragements about getting your kid individual counseling as well. And if you get one who doesn't know squat about this, they're going to try addressing one, maybe two issues. And then what's going to happen is they're going to continue to fall back to their cutting, which does nothing but make them feel worse about themselves, which does nothing but feeds them right back into doing exactly what they did from the start, which is not what we want, right? Then they feel guilty because now even the brain doctors can't help with this, and I'm totally screwed up, and it just feeds into this even worse. If you don't walk into this with education behind you and understanding how this stuff works and what we need to do, you can make it worse for your kid than you actually make it better. All right. So now we got to move to what are we supposed to do as parents? And then we're going to move into our interview with my wife, Corey, and kind of help going through some of these stuff. But let's talk real quick. What do we do? I'm going to break down to you guys just some of the fundamental stuff of what dialectical behavior therapy is. I'm not asking you guys to be therapists. Don't freak out and thinking, oh, crap, Trey's having me come and be a therapist, and I need to come in and do all these different... I'm not saying you need to be a therapist. Leave that up to your therapist to do those things. But that doesn't mean that we can't offer a therapeutic value to our kids that help facilitate and make this better and easier for them. So we're going to talk about some of that. So, interestingly enough, dialectical behavior therapy is actually kind of a mix of what is called Zen Buddhism and then just some common therapy techniques. Now, don't freak out on me if you heard Zen Buddhism. I'm not saying we're trying to convert kids over to Zen Buddhists. What we're going to do is we're going to talk about one of the things that Zen Buddhism emphasizes and then how we can use that with our kids. I'm not a Zen Buddhist myself. I'm not endorsing Zen Buddhism, guys. But one of the principles of what we're going to pull out of that is really, really good. So they combine this principle we're going to talk about with some of your basic cognitive behavioral stuff is what they call it in our field. What we're talking about, cognitive is just the brain, the thoughts, the thinking that we have, right? And then also the behavioral stuff, how we act. So you can imagine that when you work on something like this, like somebody who has anxiety, who's really anxious, right? Well, you have to address what they're thinking. Oh, my God, I'm going to lose it. I'm not going to be able to do this. I'm not going to be able to handle this. Oh, and so you've got to address the thoughts, right? Well, that's not enough. If they have these thoughts and they begin to address them, but they don't work on not allowing themselves to quit too early, you know, so if they get really anxious but they quit too early, right? Well, if you don't address the behavior and they quit too early anyway, you can work all you want on the thoughts, but if the behaviors aren't changing, guess what that does? That feeds right back into their thoughts. Well, oh, I can't, look, I failed at this. Well, I can't handle this, right? So you got to address both. So when you mix a combination of this Zen Buddhism type focus with these common psychological approaches, you get a really, really good thing. So let's talk about that. Basically, DBT, kind of this dialectical behavior therapy rests on kind of a balance of this. First off, we have to encourage our kids that they need to change themselves, right? If they're cutting on their skin, they're going to run into more than one thing. One, they're going to become ashamed of it probably. They're going to begin to try to hide it, but they can't always hide it, right? So eventually they're going to have to show these things, and so they're eventually going to have so many cuts on themselves they create scars, and it can create a lot of problems. So we have to help our kids work on encouraging them to be patient and change themselves, right? Learning how to make changes. However, we have to also combine that with this. We have to teach our kids to learn how to accept themselves exactly where they are. Now think about that. That's the Zen Buddhist principle we're talking about. It's the idea. But, I mean, think about it. Pull it out of that. Take away the spiritual stuff of Zen Buddhism and just listen to that. Learning to teach somebody to accept themselves right where they are, but then also acknowledge that maybe I'm okay with where you are, maybe you're okay with where you are, but it's not good for you in the long run. Your arms are going to get cut up, and they're going to get scarred, and then you're going to be embarrassed, and then you're going to feel guilty. Do you want that? And then talk about, okay, I'm okay with you where you are, but let's talk about how you can change. Be okay with where you are. You're trying to deal with this stuff that's going on in your life the best way that you know how. But let's talk about some better ways to do it, right? I mean, that's all this is. And it's beautiful, and it's brilliant. And I'll be honest, you can use that with anybody in their lives when they're struggling with this stuff. But, so, you take this idea of this, you know, balancing, this encouraging them to accept themselves where they are, but wanting to change, apply it with this other stuff. Also, guys, here's my big thing. Do not try to handle this on your own. You may be smart. You may get everything that I've said. But do not try to tackle this thing with your kid by yourself. You are not a therapist. You have not had the education that you need to be able to deal with this stuff effectively. And you're biased because you're family. I mean, you can't get out of the bias of that anyway. Don't try to tackle this stuff by yourself. Get your kid individual counseling. Make sure that they at least have a pretty good idea of the stuff that I'm explaining to you guys in here. Everybody's not going to have a perfect grasp like I've got on this stuff. I've been studying this for the last 10 years, and I've made it one of my favorite things to study for some obvious reasons like we've discussed before. It's been one of my favorite things to study. Not everybody's going to know every single thing we're talking about, but make sure that they at least have the basic tenets of understanding of this. If your therapist goes, or your kid's therapist goes, well, we'll just do this one thing and then that'll be good. Walk out. Don't pay them for their session, but walk out and go find yourself another therapist. If they think if just trying to approach one individual thing is going to fix this, you're setting your kid up to fail, you're setting that therapist up to fail, and potentially and probably making this work. Make sure that they get you got to hit all the avenues of issues that they might be having that are leading them back to wanting to cutting. So get individual counseling. Second off, I also recommend get them into group therapy. If you can find a group therapy that addresses this stuff, get them in that. Many parents look at me and say, well, Trey, isn't that just going to give them more ideas? Bull crap, guys. I can promise you they're getting plenty of ideas without going to group therapy to get more. Media, news, music that they're listening to, their friends that they're hanging out with are giving them plenty of ideas of stupid crap to do to themselves, that to hurt themselves and to cut on themselves and all that other different stuff. I promise you they're getting plenty of it. Group sessions gives them a place to feel like it's a normalized issue. Remember, 56%. Of the kids who are out there said they've done this, right? So it helps them realize I'm not the only one, and that is powerful and healing in and of itself right there. So get them in group sessions. Help them normalize that you're not the only one who's going through this stuff. Also, help them be accountable. Find somebody that they can be accountable to, whether it be us as parents. If you're comfortable doing it without being judgmental about it, help them be accountable. Hey, how'd you do with this? How'd it go? Talk to me about it. Be accountable. We all have those issues, that those things we need accountable to. We all have the crap that we struggle with in our lives, right? Maybe it's not cutting for us, but maybe it's overeating and obesity. That's one of mine, is overeating and obesity. So I had to seek out accountability. I had to talk to my neighbor and say, hey, man, you want to start working out? And so now he holds me accountable. And you better believe I roll out of the freaking bed because I know that my neighbor Sam's going to be waiting on me to get there. Seeking accountability is a great thing. So getting our kids accountable, helping us keep them accountable can be a very good thing so long as you can do it in a non-judgmental way. We're going to wrap up on a few more points. I want to go ahead and move to the interview with Corey right now so you guys can kind of hear from face value. What is a person who has experienced this stuff firsthand, who's now a parent herself, what does she wish would have happened as a kid? What experience does she wish she would have had? And what can we learn from her and her experiences now as we're a parent? All right, hey guys, I'm here with my beautiful wife, my beautiful bride, Corey Gibson. Wanted to give you guys just kind of one person's experience who grew up with kind of a lot of stuff that she had going on. And one of the outcomes was that she turned to cutting. So I wanted to give you guys a little bit. So, Corey, first off, thank you for being on with us and being willing to visit with our audience.
Sure, of course. I'm happy to be here.
Well, hey, real quick, just tell me a little bit about your experience that you had with cutting.
For me, cutting, this was probably 11 years ago. Cutting was not something that was as mainstream as it is now. At the time, I had no idea of what I was doing, except that I knew that it gave me a sense of control and in a way made me feel better.
Absolutely. One of the things I wanted to ask you is, what if you had to put your thumb on one, two, five, 10 things that you say was your primary motivator to leading up to it that you could help other parents kind of get an eye on? What would you say those motivators were?
For me, I believe it was there was some conditions that had happened in my life that had really kind of caused me to become quite isolated. To be real specific, I had broken up with a boyfriend that I had been with for many years, and during those years of being with him, it had slowly become isolated from other people. And so when we broke up, I had no one. And I had no one to talk with. I had no one to turn to. I had no one to vent and to cry with. And so for me, it was an outlet. And it was just the way that I was able to relieve some of my anxiety and stress and hurt.
So what I'm hearing is that what had happened was you'd gotten with this boyfriend, had been with him for how long? You've told me before, how long was it totally?
6 years.
So it was 6 years. So this wasn't just like a few month date. And then through that period of time, you began to become more and more isolated from other folks, friends, other family and whatnot. And then what happened when y'all had broken up, that is a part of what led to kind of the anxiety you said, and the cutting was actually a part of relieving it.
Absolutely. And, you know, there were some superficial friendships that were had. Mm. I mean, from the outside looking in, you probably would have never seen me as someone who was isolated, somebody who didn't have a lot of friends. But as far as anybody who was actually close, who was a companion, he was the only one. And so whereas I had a lot of friends that I, you know, at the time I'd go drinking with or whatever, but as far as to call when something actually arose that I needed help, there was no one.
Interesting. Well, that kind of brings me to one of my next questions I wanted to ask you. And again, we're operating under the venue of how do we talk to these parents that are going to be listening to this. How do we give them as much information to keep their eyes peeled for this type of thing? So understanding that, first off, Corey is a very, very smart lady, very intelligent, she's able to think ahead and problem solve very well. With all of that being said, what information, what advice would you give to parents to say, if you can, do your best to look out for these things?
You know, I think first and foremost, I think you need to know who your children's friends are. I think you need to be involved in your child's life, but not controlling in your child's life. I think that there is an element of involvement that you can have without it being, you know, a helicopter mom or a helicopter dad. I think that's very important. I think if your child does have a boyfriend or girlfriend, you need to be involved in that relationship. And that's not, you know, go on dates with them and sit in the middle kind of thing, but know what the relationship was like. I know for me, looking back, it was too serious, too young. And it caused a lot of obviously, it caused a lot of problems. It caused a lot of isolation. A lot of my friends that I had early on in high school just slowly faded away because of this time that I wanted to spend with this guy. And so I think you need to be looking at your children and making sure that they're diversifying their friends, you know, and that they have a network of friends. One thing that I see is a lot of parents assume that since they had one friend in kindergarten, that surely they're still friends in ninth grade. But more than likely, they've recycled through those friends. You know, you just kind of cycle through friends and know who their friends are now.
Yeah, no, that's really good. And Corey, I love what you said about building the relationships with your kids, because I think it's real easy for all of us to default back to looking for the signs and the telltale things and trying to play like, you know, detective for these types of things. But in reality, the best panacea for all of this is really, like we talk about at Family Podcast Network, it's about relationship with your kids.
Yes.
You've got to have relationship with your kids. You've got to know who they are. You've got to have that baseline for personality so that you can notice when there's things that are changing.
Yes.
And I think that's wonderful, wonderful that you bring that up. Let me ask you a couple more questions. Do you still have urges?
You know, I think just like any addiction that somebody has, there's always going to be those reminders or things that trigger a desire. You know, much like an alcoholic probably wants to stay away from a bar. Unfortunately for cutting, a lot of times a trigger is something emotional. And we all go through things emotional. And therefore, yes, even as a healthy, grown woman, you know, mother of almost four, yeah, absolutely, there's still those urges. It still was something that was a part of my life. Now, they're very few and far between, and because of the network that I have now, I can talk with people. I have people who I can talk with, and I'm able to vent anger, frustration, depression, whatever it is. I mean, depression is not a dirty word. Everybody experiences depression at some point in time or another. And it's just being able to have that outlet of somebody to talk to now. But absolutely, those urges are still there. They don't disappear just because something magical happens in your life or you get older or anything of that manner. And I think that if you have a child that has struggled with cutting, that that's something you will need to always keep an eye on and not in such a manner that it's like we mentioned before, over-controlling or neurotic. But definitely, you know, keep an eye on your kid. And once again, having that relationship with them to where they can come and talk to you when they have urges.
Well, one of the reasons, listeners, that I bring this up is a lot of the parents that I work with that have kiddos who have cut or are currently cutting or burning or whatever type of injurious behavior is, they often harbor a lot of guilt about that. And I and Corey, correct me if I'm wrong, but you know we've set up a very, very healthy environment here in our household, a healthy marriage. We really facilitate the relationship between us two, between our kids. And I want people to hear that if your kiddos are, all hope is not lost. If those kind of things still continue, it's okay. Doesn't necessarily mean you need to be beating yourself up as a parent. What it just means is just like we always talk about in Family Podcast Network, especially with this tough stuff like this, it's all about the relationships. Right. You got to get in there. You got to love. You've got to be there and active and involved with your kiddos. Second to last question, Corey, and we'll wrap this up. What do you do now to cope? What's different now compared to what it was like then? And then that's going to segue us into our last question. What advice do you give to parents?
You know, I think without a doubt, I think age helps. I mean, I think we all know what it was like going through our teenage years. Some of us had better experiences than others, but I mean, we all know that there are hormones and there's brain development occurring. I mean, there's just a number of things that are happening that don't make teenagers the most stable individuals, and that's completely completely normal. You know, we all know that. So I think age definitely helped. I think also, like we've talked about before, just getting a more positive network of friends. You know, I remember I finally just reached out to a family member, and for me, going to church is something that was just kind of the beginning of the end when it came to the depression. But I also would encourage you, if you see your children, and I know that my husband here on Family Podcast Network would encourage as well, if you see your children struggling with a self-injurious behavior, get them help. Don't think that just by sitting down and talking it out with them is going to make it better. You know, counseling is for those that need some help, you know, need some direction, need to know how to have other outlets, you know, what they can do differently other than harming themselves, whether it's exercising or riding horses, you know, whatever it might be, help them find an outlet for that. And so, you know, it just like it's encouraged over and over again on Family Podcast Network, it's just getting that relationship. I know y'all are going to hear that word a million times, and you've probably heard it a million times before, but it is just key, having that relationship with your children so that they feel comfortable talking with you about it, and y'all can go together to seek help.
Well, Corey, that's all the questions I have for you. Thank you so much for being on. I appreciate not only your candidness to talk about where you are now, but also about where you came from. I think that's invaluable for parents. I think there's going to be some parents out there that are going to be listening to this that'll take it as a relief to know that there's other folks who have come out the other end of this just fine. And sure do appreciate you being on. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, I mean, what an amazingly interesting thing. To get to hear from Corey in that light. And so I want to wrap it up on this. Now, with what Corey has said about relationships and all that other stuff, I wanted to end my final points for what can we do for our kids who are struggling with this type of thing, right? Here's it. This is it right here. And this is what any kid I've ever worked with, if I've asked them the question, I love asking kids this question, if you could ask parents the one thing that you would like from them when it comes to you struggling with, what is it? It's this right here. It is necessary to build a good, empathic relationship with your kids. What is empathy? Empathy, you know what it is. It's that ability to put ourselves in somebody else's shoes. Kids, teenagers, and adults, or adolescents, excuse me, that I've worked with over the last 8 years tell me this. If they could ask anything from us when it comes to working on this and getting better at it, it's this right here. Put yourself in my shoes and just try to imagine what it feels like to be here. Number one, how do you do that as a parent? Acknowledge your kids are hurting. There is something going on. I've had sex. Well, what, Trey, what, I just think that they're looking for attention. Let's just go down that for a minute. Okay. What if they are just looking for attention? I want you to ask yourself this. What would it take to get you to a point to where to get somebody's attention, you would go to the point where you would begin cutting on your skin or burning yourself or rubbing an eraser on yourself? What would it take to get you to that point? Now, put yourself in those shoes, and that is probably where your kid's at. Now, parents at this point want to get depressed, or they want to try to avoid this because, like, well, that means I've been a horrible parent, blah, 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 all this other stuff. Oh, no, you know, and they don't want to look this in the face. But your kids need you too. And to ignore this stuff does nothing but exactly what's gotten them there in the first place. Acknowledge that your kids are hurting. Maybe they're doing this to get attention, but it's because they want you to look here and say, look, I'm hurting, guys. Mom, Dad, pay attention. And I'm sorry to get so fired up about this, but when kids are doing that, they do want your attention because the crap inside them is hurting. Empathize with your kids. Try if you can, and this has been the most effective thing that I have seen help kids get through and get worked past this stuff where they're not doing it anymore. It's this right here. Get to a point that you can even kind of understand it. You know what? I get why you're doing that. That is powerful. Just like what Corey was talking about. If you have a good relationship with somebody, you can connect with them at that level where you understand what they're going through. I encourage you to get to a point where you can look at your kids and they're cutting and they're burning or any of those other things, and you can say that I understand why you would even see doing that as being a legitimate option to relieve, like, your emotional stress. Get yourself to that point where you can understand and even get why they do it. Are you saying it's okay? No, you're not saying, hey, it's okay that you're doing that. I'm so glad you're out cutting on yourself. No, you're not agreeing with him and telling him that it's okay to do that. But what you're saying is that I get why. And that is powerful. It's that connection right there that can cause your kid to feel accepted without feelings of like you're trying to push them too far too quickly. Then, once you've been able to accept that is when you'll start to see kids begin to, you know, do okay. Then you can start accepting the idea of phasing it out and replacing it with different things that aren't quite so destructive, that don't cause scarring or skin tissue damage, right? I want you guys to think about it. Though we've tabooized this so much as being like, oh, this is weird, I don't give a shit, you know. Even though we've done that, I mean, think about it. It's absolutely no different than what we do with our kids for any other behaviors. If your kid starts to throw a temper tantrum at Walmart to get what they want, we don't look at him and go, oh my God, I can't believe you did that. We don't do that to a little kid. We know that is normal behavior. It's not okay. So what do? We begin to work with them. We begin to discipline them. We begin to reward them when they're not throwing fits. We begin to discipline them when they're not, right? We begin to teach them right ways to handle their upsetness when they don't get the toy at Walmart or whatever store they're at, right? What's the difference? I can already hear some of you, Trey, you know, cutting on your skin, I mean, that's dangerous, right? And I get what you're saying. And I agree with you to a certain degree. It is different in that it doesn't cut open skin or cause blood to come out. But I mean, take away that. What's the difference in the results that the kids are trying to get? Nothing. But if you treat it as though it's some weirdo, whacked out, crazy job thing, then what a kid does is they just feel embarrassed. They feel guilty. They feel the need to hide it more. They feel the need to keep it from us more. And what is that good? I mean, what good does that do for them? Nothing. Nothing. Not whenever you want them to be open with you about it and talk to you about it. Because when they're open and they talk to us about it, then we can start holding them accountable. We can teach them different ways. So the number one thing I want you guys to pull from me, I want you to pull from Corey. Get a good relationship with your kid. Remember, that's how we end every single one of these podcasts. It's all about the relationship, right? When it comes to helping our kids prevent this type of thing from happening, build a solid relationship with your kids where they feel comfortable telling you everything. Everything. And then they'll have no problems wanting to be open with you about this. Or asking you, yeah, so-and-so at school is cutting on themselves. Mom, what's up with that? Dad, what do you think about that? So remember, guys, be empathic. If your kids are experiencing this thing, be empathic. Put yourself in their shoes. Imagine what that feels like, right? That's one of the most important parts of all of this. So maybe you guys are thinking, wow, Trey, this is really great information, but what do I do with it? Again, if it's not you and your kids that are struggling with this, you know somebody. 56%, that means one out of every two kids that you look at has done this at least once before. One out of every two. If you have two kids, it means that it's probable. Remember, we're talking about the law of probability here, not guarantees. But it's probable that one out of your two kids has done it before. But maybe it's not your kids. Maybe you know somebody else. Maybe there's somebody else. Get them to this site. Help their parents get educated on this. Help your kids not have even more psychological distress. Or these kids, maybe not your kids, but these kids who are going through this, help them not have more by getting their parents educated on this stuff. Have them come here. Have them sign up. Have them get a part of our forums. And then maybe there we can get this stuff talked out and we can actually get these kids some very good help, some good advice, some good places they can do these things with that they can help understand this better instead of just doing nothing but hurting them worse and causing them to bunker in even deeper into this. Well, I want to say thank you guys again for tuning in to another episode of Family Podcast Network. I want you guys to consider a few things. Number one, first off, consider subscribing to my newsletter. All that newsletter is going to be is you're just going to get updates when I give you guys a new one of these podcasts. So consider signing up for the subscription, guys. It's a very short email that just says, hey, a new podcast is up. Come check us out. I'm not going to hammer you with all sorts of different types of things that are on there. I'm not going to slough you with all these ads or anything like that. It just lets me help you guys know when another episode is up. So consider signing up for my newsletter. Those folks that maybe are struggling with this, get them to sign up with this too and get them get in here. Consider signing up for my website with Family Podcast Network. Remember, sign up is completely free. That just helps me know who's out there, what's going on, and how I can help you guys. It gives you guys a better connection to me to help ask me questions and what's going on. Also, if you have any specific questions that you don't feel comfortable posting in something like that in a comment section, consider sending me an email to Trey Gibson, TreyGibson, at thefamilypodcastnetwork.com and ask me questions. Feel free to ask me whatever you've got. I'm still at a position in emails that I can get to you guys pretty dadgum quickly. I also want you guys to consider this. I've got a new forum up, guys. I'm opening up in there for different age categories and groups. It's www.thefamilypodcastnetwork.com/home, H-O-M-E, and that's where you can get on our forum, sign up in our forum system, get in there and start talking to some of the other parents. Throw questions out there for me. What I'm actually going to do is I'm going to open a new forum section that will allow my wife to get in there, and I'm going to put her as a moderator, and you guys can come ask questions about cutting to me or to her and get some good advice from folks who have been down the roads and have worked with the folks and the kiddos that are in these situations. Also, I always want to ask you guys, if Family Podcast Network has helped you in any way, consider donating to us or becoming a member. One of those, each two. You can do either one. It's not that big of a deal, but drop us down some donations. Remember, my ability to keep these up there is contingent on my being able to pay for the servers. If you guys wouldn't mind, if I've helped you out, if you're getting 60 cents per podcast out of what I'm doing, considering donating. Remember, I've made them set up to where memberships are one-time payments. You can come in, you can put a one-time payment down for $5. You can do a 3-month, you can do a 6-month, you can do a 12-month. If you do a full year, I'll cut you a discount on that so you don't have to pay as much as you do monthly. And so consider donating those. You'll also be getting exclusive access to ebooks once I get those ebooks up there. And consider doing those types of things. I want to say thank you again for you guys for listening. Remember, it's all about the relationships with your kids. You guys have a good day, have a good week, and we'll see you at our next podcast.